really fascinating song by Kings of Leon, Use Somebody. You know, when you think about the words to that song, it's really about getting to know someone. It's about, you know, there's certain relationships that we need in our life. In fact, when you look at a couple lyrics, I don't know if we can put these back up, there's a line that says that we need more than painted faces in the crowd that are out of reach. And you know, this whole idea of having a full access backstage pass is just that. It's having access to someone. It's being able to see who someone really is. And today, I just want to re-clarify, as we did last week, you know, what a backstage pass is. I went on eHow a couple weeks ago, found out, you know, I want to find out exactly what is a backstage pass. Here's what it said. It said that all access backstage passes allow you to hang around with your favorite musicians and to see what it's really like behind the scenes at a gig. You can get anywhere backstage at a show if you have an all-access backstage pass, and they are specific to an individual event. Get this, they are hanging on a lanyard. All right, you've got one of these. This is so cool. It's what I love about Crosspoint. You know, we're always giving you kind of cool stuff like this. You know, and what's cool about this is, you know, we like access to people, right? I mean, we want to know people behind the stage, behind the scenes, and yet this is not something new. I mean, this is something people have been doing for thousands of years, all the way back to the beginning of time. People have been wanting access. In fact, the person that's been the most popular person of all time, the person that's spanned continents, that spans time, that person being God, that's been present today, tomorrow, that's not limited by location, for some reason, all throughout history, there's been a difficulty or a felt difficulty in having access to this God. And so I want us to continue to look at what it means to really know who this God is. Now, if you're a racing fan, any racing fans in the room? So I know who I'm talking to. Yeah. You know, if you're an IndyCar fan, you probably are aware that just this past week, they tested the 2012 chassis for the upcoming IndyCar series, which I know you are all excited about. Yeah. And, you know, and something fascinating with this is it's an Italian company that's building the chassis. They're named Dallara. And they're kind of new to this whole American race circuit. They've had a car over here, but they sent a couple of their engineers to the Indy 500 a few months ago to just kind of take everything in. They said, yeah, they're going to be the main chassis builder, which is basically everything on the car except for the engine, if you're not familiar with racing terms. And they're going to be the main chassis builder for the upcoming year. And they said, you know, we really need to understand the racing circuit, how this works in the United States, because all they've known is Formula One. And Formula One is quite different than series here in the United States. In fact, in Formula One, it's mainly about the car. The car is everything. It's the technology on the car. It's the new advancements that they've made in the technology. You know, the team is somewhat there. The driver is somewhat there. But they made some interesting realizations when they sent these two engineers to the Indy 500. I mean, they soaked it in. They took in the hysteria of the entire event. But in the magazine that Dallara puts out this past June, here's what these engineers said. They said, whereas in Formula One, people see the machine as being more important than the driver, here it's the man who risks everything to overtake his rival. This reality reveals a more human and less technological side to the event. Contact with the team, the car, the driver forms a fundamental part of the show, which is the sense of openness and approachability. They said, man, there's a drastic thing that the American people are looking for. They're not interested in the cars like we know in Italy, in Europe. They're interested in knowing the person, because here's the big deal about a backstage pass. A backstage pass is relational. It's about the relationship. It's about wanting to know the people behind the scenes. Now, you know, earlier in my work life, I actually worked backstage at a concert venue. I used to work, and I saw a lot of people, a lot of big-name stars come in and out, and I remember seeing someone that I was kind of following at the time. They were kind of like a big deal to me, and I was excited they were coming to town, and, you know, I don't want to mention them by name, because I don't want to throw them under the bus or myself under the bus, and so all I can say is if I threw their name out, you would know them. I mean, they would be like a household name to you. But, you know, not only did I think this person was awesome, but I was following them. I was kind of into what they were doing at the time. And when I saw them backstage, I thought that I knew who they were. And yet in that encounter, I really discovered what they were really like behind the scenes. And I was actually embarrassed. I was kind of actually embarrassed that I was following this person. When I really got access to see who they really were, I kind of felt like, man, you know, they put on a great show up front, but behind the scenes, they're a very different person. And so four observations today as we kind of take this next step, week number two in Backstage Pass. Here's what I've discovered. Now, maybe you were drugged here by a friend, by your parents. Maybe a friend brought you in here. They're like, man, Crosspoint's got a hot band. You want to come see them? Maybe you heard that we have great coffee and you want to come drink that. Or you heard there's a really funny looking guy up front. I don't know. You know, maybe you're here for a variety of reasons. But here's one observation. Here's one thing I've learned. When I don't know someone for who they really are, I end up wasting my time and I end up experiencing pain and misunderstanding. And has anybody else experienced that at any point in your life? I mean, as I got to thinking about this, I thought, you know, I'm probably not the only one who's experienced pain and misunderstanding because I thought I knew who someone was. I mean, think back to grade school. When you're in grade school, remember that best friend you had? And you're like, man, I thought I knew who they were until they totally turned on me. And I thought they were in my camp, they were in my court, they were watching my back. And then something happened, and there was a lot of pain, there was a lot of misunderstanding. Anybody else have an experience like that in grade school? Yeah, I see a lot of heads nodding. You know, dating, if you're dating someone, you know, maybe you thought, man, I know who this person is. I feel like I know them. And yet, all of a sudden, you show up at their place unexpectedly, and you begin to see something that you didn't know. And you're like, man, I thought I knew who they were. And ladies, let me just say something to you if you're dating someone right now. You know, those of you that are dating someone right now, let me just say, you know, if you're dating someone and you don't like who they are and you're trying to change them, let me just say, it's not going to work. I don't care how hot you think you are. I don't care how much you think you got it going on. You are not going to change them. So you just need to realize that right now. All right? I mean, there's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of misunderstanding if you think that's going to be the case. You know, and so, you know, no one wants to waste their time and experience pain because we thought that we knew who someone was. And this especially is true when it comes to God, when it comes to Jesus, when it comes to the church. And so, you know, Jesus knew this was going to happen. Jesus knew that there are going to be people that are going to experience this. And so in another one of the eyewitness accounts that we find in the Gospels in the Bible, now the Gospels are the first four books of the New Testament portion of the Bible, which are four accounts of the life of Jesus, written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, four men. And basically these are these four men's eyewitness account, meaning these men are watching Jesus, they're watching him interact with people, they're watching him, he's like the greatest show on earth. And they're watching him, and they're recording what they're seeing. And so these are accurate. These have been tested over time. They've been validated. These are reporting what, in this case, Mark is seeing taking place in Jesus' life. And so here we have this fascinating encounter. It says, once again, Jesus was out beside the lake, and a large crowd came to him as he began to teach them. Now, here's what I love about Jesus. Jesus, man, he was the most attractive person of that particular time. He was literally like the greatest show on earth. I mean, he's doing these fantastic miracles. People are seeing him. They're intrigued by his interpretations of the scriptures. And by the groves, people are being magnetized to him because there's something dynamic about what he's bringing to life. Take a look at verse 14. It says, as he walked along, meaning Jesus walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus. Now, that's a name right there. You thought you had a bad name, and then when you made fun of when you were in grade school, like, think if you had the name Alphaeus. I mean, that would really be like a point to be made fun of, right? So it says, while he was walking along, he saw that Levi, the son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Now, let me just stop here for a second because, you know, a tax collector, I want to remind us what a tax collector is. We're not talking IRS tax collectors here, all right? I mean, we're not talking people who work for the IRS. A tax collector is one of the most despised, one of the most hated individuals in a community. Levi here, again, like Zacchaeus last weekend, is a tax collector, which means he's robbing his fellow people in his community. It means he's robbing the people in his community to pay the invaders of his nation, which again are the Romans. The Romans were like invading everybody at that time. They took over like literally every country of the time. And so he's robbing his fellow people to pay the Romans, and he's also taking a big chunk so that he can become wealthy. And so he's a very despised individual. And so we continue here, and he saw Levi sitting at the tax collector's booth, and he said, follow me, Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. Now, something fascinating that's going on right here. I don't know if you notice this in listening to this right here, but if you notice, Levi is still sitting at the booth. He did not get up. He was not being attracted to Jesus. There's probably a couple reasons why he wasn't moving toward Jesus. You know, and probably a number of reasons. One might be that he was just uninvited. Maybe nobody gave him the invite. Nobody said, hey, you got to come with us and go see Jesus, the greatest show on earth. Or maybe another reason, well, he was just simply disinterested. Maybe he wasn't really interested in what Jesus was going on with him. And here's the problem right here. You know, a lot of people feel like they're uninvited or disinterested. And when they feel this way, they feel like they're disqualified. I mean, that's what Crosspoint exists for. We exist for people like this. I mean, we push the envelope around here with loud music. We say things you aren't going to necessarily hear in other sectors of society. And we do this. And I know at times it makes those, the kind of the religious crowd, a little uncomfortable. And yet we exist for people that are disinterested and uninvited. It's at the core of what we're about. In fact, when we first started Crosspoint, I was having regular networking conversations with people. Still do on a regular basis, talking with people about church. I mean, it's not like my first conversation, but eventually they find out I'm a pastor and want to know about what we're doing. And you know, I found something out. I discovered something. If for every 10 conversations I would have, 8 or 9 individuals would say, "Oh, well, I've got a church. I'm connected somewhere. I go there, you know, at least every now and then." I'm like, "Man, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, we're not interested in disconnecting people that are connected to church. We're here for people that are disinterested in God, that feel like there's no place for them to kind of explore who God is and kind of make decisions for themselves." Now, I don't know why Levi didn't get invited. I don't know why he was disinterested. I don't know what things caused him to be that way, and I could probably come up with a few. And one may even be his profession. I mean, he's a despised, hated person. And there are probably people around him that are like, you know, Levi. I mean, they look at him like, "Man, he's not going to be interested in Jesus." They look at him like, "He's not interested in that." I mean, the reasons he didn't show up and kind of be gravitated to Jesus was probably for the same reasons that people don't show up at church today. Probably some of the very same reasons. And I tell you what, it's probably not that they're disinterested in Jesus, it's that they're disinterested in religion. Because you see, all that it's become, like, "Man, I'm not interested in that. I just want a place where I can explore God. I don't have my crap together. I need a place where I can go and I can kind of work on it, figure this stuff out along the way." Well, that's what Crosspoint's for, a place where you can just come as you are and you can kind of figure it out. You don't have to have it all together to come to this place. But we believe God meets us here, and in some unique way, he takes us to new places. And yet what's amazing in this story right here is that even though Levi wasn't interested or invited, what's fascinating is that Jesus was looking for him. I mean, Jesus was looking for him. And that's the Jesus I see right here in this story, this God who loves and pursues, not to throw out moral commands or to heap a bunch of condemnation. He's like, no, he runs after Levi just to love on him, just simply to say, "Hey, Levi, I'm looking for you." Notice what else goes on here. It says, while Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. Now, I want to kind of give us a picture of what's going on right here, because sometimes we miss this right here. You know, get this. This is the one who spoke the universe into place. This is the one who created molecules and atoms and solar systems and black holes and things like rhinoceroses and porcupines and even cats, for God's sake. I don't know why. I mean, this is the God that put everything into motion, the creator of everything, and he's actually sitting down with this hated, despised, broken man and having a meal with him. It says, when the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he do this? Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" So you have this wild, crazy, this guy who's totally uninterested in Jesus, totally uninterested in God, totally disconnected. And you have the religious people over here, and they're like, "Jesus, you need to not go over there. You're in the wrong circle here, Jesus. We're trying to keep people like him out of this circle." And they're saying, "Jesus, this is the wrong environment for you." And as I shared last week, you know, this is something in America we don't totally get. They're kind of bothered that Jesus is actually going to his house and having dinner. You and I, we invite our in-laws over for dinner. We may not always be excited about it, but we invite them over. We invite people that we may not really like, but like it's a social thing to do, so we have them over into our home. But in this culture, when you invite a guest into your home, it's like you're saying, this is like pinnacle right here. It's like you're saying, this person is like stronger than family to me. This is somebody that I support. And so this is something very significant. Don't miss what Levi's doing right here. He's a smart guy. What he's doing right here is he's leveraging this cultural icon of inviting people into his home that he loves and supports, that are closer than family to him. And he's leveraging this experience at his house because he realizes something. He realizes that if he supports Jesus, he supports these people who are in his same profession as he is, and he realizes that his friends are never going to go down by the oceanside and see Jesus. So the only way I'm going to get them to experience him, to see him for who he really is to invite them into my home, because this says, hey, this is somebody who's important to me, and so this is what he does. He says this is the only one they're going to see Jesus for who he really is. Which leads me to the kind of the third big observation right here. which is that Levi creates an environment for his friends to get to know who Jesus really is, who are really the uninvited and the disinterested. And you see, the religious crowd, I mean, they were bothered by this. They're muttering, they're tweeting, they're saying, they're going, oh, how can he be doing this? Jesus, he's going to the house of people. He needs to get in our circle. What's he doing with these people? And here's what I love about Jesus. Jesus is more concerned with people knowing him than he is with how it looks to the religious crowd. You see, we forget how scandalous Jesus was. We forget that Jesus was very scandalous. He wasn't scandalous in an immoral way, but when it came to him breaking the mold of the expectation of the religious crowd, I mean, he was scandalous. And Levi realizes that he needs to leverage this meal, this environment, so his friends can see who Jesus really is. And I need you to understand something. This is why Crosspoint exists. I mean, there's something that happens still today for whatever reason in our culture. I don't know why it is, but at 9 and 10:30, and really even at 12 on Sunday mornings, this is still a time when people who are generally disinterested in Jesus, in religion, in church, or people who are spiritual wanderers will still come into an environment like this to try to figure out who this Jesus really is. And at Crosspoint, we want to leverage that. We want to leverage that so that we can help people see who this Jesus is. In fact, there's everything that we do around here at Crosspoint, there's a reason behind it. There's nothing that happens randomly in this place. You might see something like, oh, that was just a cool song they did right here. That was Kings of Leon, popular song, they just did that. No, we did that for a reason. We did that for a reason because we realize that if you're newer to this place, if you're not really sure what you think about God, this is something that creates common ground for you. You know, we realize that, you know, we put signs up by the road. We send mailers into neighborhoods because we believe that Jesus is worth the investment. It helps people point to this place so they can come into an environment and they can potentially see Jesus for who he really is. You see, we have greeters at the front door who are there just with a smile on their face and hopefully a breath mint in their mouth, because the breath mint is really important. And they're not just there randomly, they're strategically there because we don't know what someone might be experiencing when they're walking in our doors. And there's nothing better than walking in and having somebody there as if we were expecting you. In fact, I had somebody come up to me 2-3 weeks ago and they said, Kurt, you know, man, it's like my second, third week here. And the first week I came, it was as if you guys knew I was coming. And I looked at them and I said, well, we did. And they looked at me with this kind of like, are you like telepathic, spiritual, like well, what are you? I'm like, no, it's nothing weird. We have anywhere from 10 to 15 first-time guests every weekend. We expect people to show up, and we want to be ready. And yes, we were expecting you on every front. And they're just like, wow, I experienced it. I mean, I just felt welcome. I felt like you know, you guys wanted me to come here. You know, we have auditorium greeters that stand at the doors back here and hand out weeklies and cool backstage passes and give you a smile. And when you walk out of here, they're going to say, thanks for coming, because we're excited that you're here. Their role is to share with you, man, we were excited that you showed up, and that's a big deal. You know, imagine if you were to show up at somebody's house. I mean, think about going to somebody's house for the very first time. You met a new friend, you're invited to lunch, because maybe they don't really like you, but they felt like it was the socially right thing to do. And so you show up, and nobody answers the door. And you're like, man, I think it's the right time. I think I'm on the right date. And so you're like, well, I'm going to walk in. Nobody's there. You just kind of help yourself into their house. You walk by the floor. You got to figure out where you're going to put your stuff down. And eventually you hear voices in the kitchen, and the people you're going to see are in the kitchen talking on the phone with their friends. I mean, how would that make you feel? You're going to be like, man, are we on the right night? Did we show up? You know, did we get the date wrong? You're like, oh, no, you showed up at the right place. That's a very awkward thing. I mean, imagine if when you sat down to dinner, they served you something that felt like you were eating something that was leftovers from the week before. Now, maybe some of you have done that because you really didn't want them to come back. I don't know. You know, we don't do that. You know, we're going to serve you really good coffee around here because we had to make a decision a few years ago when we launched this place. Are we going to serve just normal coffee or really good coffee? Starbucks does it for a buck, right? I mean, they serve you really good coffee. You pay a buck for it, and you're willing to do that because it's really good. You know, we said we want really good coffee. We're going to do it not because we want to make a buck off of it, but because we simply want to create a common ground. When you have a cup of coffee in your hand, it creates a commonness. And it's changing the world one life at a time, by the way, as well. Which, speaking of Starbucks, by the way, if you've got a cup of coffee in your hand, just hold it up right now. Just hold it up. Let me just see. Yeah, isn't that awesome? Look at that. Now, let me just say something. You know, Starbucks does this for a buck. Did you notice what wasn't there at the table when you picked up your coffee this morning? Did you notice there wasn't like any can to put a few coins in, or you know, anything like that? I mean, you know, in a few weeks, in 7 weeks, we're going to start this strong journey. And, you know, there's going to be some key components to that. One being the weekend services, another is we're going to give you some tools that you're going to take with you. And you're going to notice there's not a little change can by the door for you to drop a few bucks, and we're going to give it to you. It's just a blessing. When you come in here, you're our guest. You know, we want to make you feel like you're at home in this place. You know, Jesus went to where his culture was, and he created an environment. Levi went to where his culture was and created an environment. There's not a single thing we do around this place that's done randomly. It's all done with great intentionality to help create an environment where people can come and see who Jesus really is. You know, and just so you know, I mean, if you come into this place and, you know, and you're handing out weeklies at the door, you're saying hey to people at the front doors, you're standing outside the front door opening the door for people, you're holding babies in the nursery, you're loading in equipment, setting up environments for people to come in and experience change in some kind of way, you're not simply just doing a task, you're literally on mission with Jesus. You're literally helping people. You're the hands and feet of helping people see who Jesus really is. Because you see, Jesus recognized something. He realized that sin crushes us. Sin is simply those things that we experience, that we choose, that are outside of God's design for our life. When we experience, when we make these choices, they begin to weigh on our lives. They begin to have negative consequences on our lives. Jesus realized this. And he wanted to create an environment where people could come and they could experience his grace, because I need it too. And so that people could come and just, over time, in their own unique way, experience him and find out that there's freedom. There's a way to get free of this. That's all he was doing. And so we do these things because we want people to see who Jesus really is so they can get free. Take a look at verse 17. It says, on hearing this, Jesus said to them, meaning all the religious people who are mumbling, they're tweeting, they're IMMing, I mean, they're saying, can you believe Jesus is doing this stuff? He says to them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Which leads me to observation number 4, which was Jesus is on a mission. You know, and this has always confused me a bit about religious people, because, you know, I see religious people sometimes, and I see them walk in the doors and sit around like, oh, I'm religious, I'm going to come and do my normal thing. And yet, here's the deal, you know, and somebody, some of us might take offense to this. This is not meant to be offensive, but the whole word Christian means being a follower of the way, meaning the way of Christ. And so when we come into an encounter with Christ and we receive from him, when he adopts us, because you remember, we don't choose Christ. Christ chose you. Right? I mean, when you're adopted into a family, you don't go and pick your adoptive family. As a child, as a baby, as an infant, when you're adopted, your adoptive family comes and adopts and chooses you. And so Jesus comes and chooses us. He says, hey, I'm right here ready. All you have to do is receive. We're ready to just, I'm just ready to lavish love on you and forgive you and begin to free you. And yet, for some reason, when we experience this, we don't see that actually means that we go on mission with Jesus. That being a follower of his means we are doing and being on the mission that he's on. You know, Jesus is on a mission, and you know, some of you might say, you know, well, Kurt, that might sound like what you're saying is, you know, once I come into this place, that you know, once I've kind of experienced Christ and I've become a Christian, that I don't matter around here anymore. You know, that, it almost sounds like you're saying that's not very nice. You know, once I've come in and I'm kind of experienced, I'm on the team, I'm in the kingdom, then I'm a nobody around here. You know, let me be really clear. That's not what I'm saying. Me saying, you know, we're here to connect with people that are disconnected from God, and everything we do is to help people experience that in some way. But I'm not saying you're not important. Let me put it this way. How many of you have kids? Show of hands. How many have more than one kid? Man, you deserve a medal of honor. Let me just say, man, if you've been raising your kids and you haven't killed them yet, you deserve a medal of honor. All right, because I know how hard it is to raise kids. Well, you know, let me put it this way. You know, I've got 3 daughters and a son at home, and oftentimes one of them will come to me and they're like, "Dad, you know, you don't love me as much as you do." Fill in the blank with any 4 of them, because they all say this, because you're doing more with so and so than you're doing with me. You know, the classic manipulation. You know, I want my way right now. And you know, a few months ago, actually about 6 months ago, our youngest daughter, who was 16 months old at the time, came down unexpectedly with this respiratory illness. And so, you know, Julie and I did what every good parent would do, right? You stop what you're doing, you take them to the doctor, and we eventually rushed off to the ER. And that turned into 10 days in the hospital unexpectedly with our 16-month-old, which means our other three kids were at home with family, with friends, grandparents. And you know, here's the deal. As we went through that experience, there were times they're like, man, Dad, we want you to come home with us right now. We want you guys to be at home staying with us. We know Mayor's in the hospital, but, you know, we really need you here. And they were struggling with this, if I'm honest with you. They struggled with us not being at home. I probably heard a few times during those 10 days, you know, how's come you're spending? Can you come and do this with us? We don't feel as loved as, you know, as Meredith does right now. And here's the deal. Here's the big deal right here in that encounter. We gave everything we had to Meredith at that moment. Not because she was more valuable than our three other kids, but because of where she was at, because of what she was dealing with at that time, she was our priority. She was our priority. Everything, all of our energies went into where she was at right then. Not because she was more important, but because she was a priority, because she was in a place where she was struggling. You know, a couple weeks ago, I was looking at the Hamilton County census data. I don't know if you've looked at the 2010 census, but really fascinating stuff. In Hamilton County alone, our population grew by 50% in the last 10 years. Over 90,000 people moved into this county in the last 10 years, which means our population right now is about 275,000 people. It was 180,000 people. Now, it's interesting. What's more interesting is to the best of my knowledge, the best reliable statistics that I can find, 17% of these people will be in a church on a given weekend, which means 46,600 approximately. Now, when you look at that number right there, I don't know what hits you, but I think that's unacceptable to Jesus. That's unacceptable to me. I hope it's unacceptable to you. Here's something to think about right here. Normal people, when you look at those statistics, are not inside churches. Now, I hate to break the news to you this morning, but the fact that you're here means you're not normal, all right? I mean, it means you're a little weird, the fact that you're sitting inside of this dark room this morning, because normal people are not in this place. And honestly, that 17%, I think that's a bit overinflated. I'm pretty confident 70% of the 17% of the greater Indianapolis area is not in a church this morning. I would find it hard to believe. But that means that if you don't go to church on a Sunday morning, you're in the majority. You're normal. That's what normal means, when you're in the majority. And yet, for some reason, sometimes we think that we should be orchestrating what happens around here for the 17% instead of the 83% that we're here for. I mean, we orchestrate around here for the 83%. We orchestrate around here for what would happen if the 83% happens every weekend. Every weekend we have anywhere from 10 to 15 first-time guests walk into this place. What happens if those 83% walk in? What are they going to experience? We don't make any assumptions about what they believe. We don't make any assumptions about what your spiritual orientation might be. We don't make any biblical knowledge assumptions. We try to start from ground zero, because we want to start where normal people are. I've had a number of conversations with people recently that they've just been struggling. A few people here at Crosspoint, a few people outside of Crosspoint. And I've realized something. I mean, I've realized that the common thing they're looking for is just some kind of hope to grab onto. What's that one thing I can grab onto that's going to give me hope? And another thing I've realized is that we all have problems. I don't know about you, but I've got problems. You got problems? I mean, it seems like everybody's got problems. In fact, I was recently meeting with someone, and they weren't connected to a church community, a life-giving community that kind of walked alongside them as they were going through their struggle. And I thought, man, where does this guy go to get encouraged? I mean, where's this guy go who's struggling with pornography? Where does he go to hear how this impacts him spiritually, but not only spiritually, but relationally and sexually and emotionally and even mentally? I mean, where is there any kind of environment this person can go where they're going to hear things that they're not going to hear in any other sector of our community? I mean, is there anybody any place this woman that's struggling, that feels all alone, any place she can go where she can see that she doesn't have to walk through life alone? I mean, where else can a person go that can maybe get a grasp that there's this bigger narrative going on, that there's this God who's doing this redemptive, restoring work in our world, and where they're at right now, that all the crap that's going on in their life right now, it doesn't have to stay this way, but they can be a part of this grand narrative story of redemption that God's doing in the world. And that your life can actually go to a new place. I mean, where do you go for this? You see, here's the tension. Most people believe the church is more about keeping these kinds of people out rather than going to great lengths to helping them feel normal in a place like this. That's what we do around. We go to great lengths to help people feel normal if they're a part of the 83%. They don't normally go to a church on a weekend. was reminded of this. We were on vacation about six weeks ago. I was reminded of this. I was sitting, kind of catching up on E! News and, you know, some of the Hollywood things that were going on. And I saw one of the Michael Jackson tributes. You know, his death was just over 2 years ago. And it really hit home when I saw this. I remember watching the funeral. I said, I watched his funeral 2 years ago on TV. And there was one little snippet, one soundbite that really summarized the whole experience for me. And it was when Brooke Shields was up giving her little homily on Michael Jackson. She was talking about how, you know, his favorite song was a song by Charlie Chaplin. It was a song called Smile. And it wasn't one of the ones he produced or he wrote or he sung. It was, you know, the smile, smile when your heart is breaking, smile when your heart is aching. And she said that was his favorite song. And she said, you know, he had a lot of pain in his life. And she was talking about this, you know, she said, you know, at the end of her homily, she said these words. She said, we need to look up to where he is, undoubtedly perched in the crescent moon, and we just need to smile. And I thought, that doesn't work. All right, I mean, that doesn't work. I mean, here you have thousands of people grieving, you know, trying to make sense of this guy who seemed to have everything, and yet he lived a life of emptiness, and you're saying, look up at the crescent moon and smile? I mean, I remember thinking, man, are you kidding me? I mean, for me, I mean, when my life sucks and I'm in the dump, I mean, you're telling me all I need to do when life doesn't make sense is look up at the crescent moon and smile? I mean, is that all you got for me? I mean, is that it? I just remember sitting there going, oh, I can't believe this. And, you know, so here's what God does. God says, I'm going to dummy-proof this for you. I'm going to give you a backstage pass. I'm going to put flesh on. I'm going to come down in the form of flesh and love, fully God, fully man. I'm going to live with the human race just so you can see who I really am. You can see who the person that I am backstage. I'm going to let you see what my character really is. I'm going to live the perfect life so you can see what it means to follow my example. And here's the deal. You're not going to be able to do it. You're going to screw it up. You're going to make mistakes along the way. And my perfect judgment demands justice. My judgment demands justice. That's what God says. And yet, he says, my love is going to take all of that out. My love is going to take it out. I'm going to die on a cross just to show you that you're worth it. That I'm going to show you this is what I'm really like. This is the person that I am. So you can make a logical decision of whether or not you want to engage with this person. You're not left in misery, pain, and feeling like you're wasting your time. That's what my hope's on. Because I can see it. I can believe it. I can test it. I read it. And I've experienced it. I mean, where else can we get this kind of hope? I mean, we get it from our government? We get it from some social institution? From Oprah? I mean, Oprah's not on anymore, so I guess we're not getting it from her, right? I mean, where do you go? Where do you go to get this kind of hope? Only in a place like this. You can come into an environment where people are saying, hey, I'm going to serve. I'm going to give a little of my time, handing out weeklies at the door, holding babies, saying hello, opening the door for somebody, playing in the band. So others can maybe see who this person Jesus really is. Earlier, I had you fill out this connection card. I want you to take that back out. And go ahead and grab it and grab a pen next to you. On the back side, I just want you to hold this in your hand. On the back side are some next steps. And in a few moments, we're going to ask you to take a next step and identify, you know, and we do this every week. Not for us. This isn't for us to say, hey, how good did we do today? This is for you to say, hey, we care way too much to allow you to walk in here and then walk out and say, oh, that was good. We want you to think, you know, what am I going to leave here and do? What's my step as I walk out of this place? And so I want you to just hold this in your hands. And here's the challenge. It's really a two-part challenge today. If you're here and you really don't know who Jesus is, I want to encourage you to just continue to explore. I mean, if you're new to this place, your first time with us, maybe you've been burned by church in the past and you're giving it a shot again. You know, just explore. Realize that, you know, there's nothing you can do. All you can do when it comes to Jesus and God is receive from him. Jesus chooses you. You don't choose him. And it can even happen now. It can happen tomorrow. It can happen next week. It's not enough to just hang around this place, but eventually maybe you'll see that there's a God who loves and pursues you, not to shout out moral commands, but he simply just wants to lavish love on you. And so I encourage you to just continue to explore. And if you're here and you've received from Jesus and you're experiencing his grace and you're living in freedom and you're here saying, man, how can I turn this around? If you're being a blessing around here in some way, then way to go. If you're holding babies or playing the band or greeting people at the front door or loading equipment, way to go. And let me just say, if you're not, maybe you're newer to this whole relationship, if you're not connected around here and you're not in some way helping others see who Jesus really is through serving around here, then let me be clear. We're through these 3 weeks, we're looking for volunteers. We're helping you see how you play a role in helping people see who Jesus is. And so maybe it's time to say, hey, I'm going to take my next step and get engaged so the 83% can see Jesus for who he really is. It happens every week. So hold those cards in your hand. We have a video, and you're going to see how this happened with one couple that just visited here a few weeks ago and how this made a difference in their lives. Take a look.